government has announced multi-million pound support to developers in an attempt to get brownfield sites developed. But will these incentives work? The food and hospitality sector is struggling, so is there a need for some of those millions to be spent helping small and medium-sized businesses to keep afloat? Also, what message does mothballing the work permit send to Manx workers? We'll hear from MHK's John Wannenberg and Rob Collister shortly, but first, Enterprise Minister Tim Johnson. Many people will wonder why we are paying millions of pounds of taxpayers' money to developers who have bought sites to develop, and their whole raison d'etre is to develop and build and sell property. So why do we need to support them?
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question, Phil. I mean, ultimately, a lot of the sites we're talking about, and as we, I think we said in the last election, and one of the issues that came out was very much about a lot of vacant sites, especially in around Douglas, sites that we've got used to seeing. I think the Villiers is a classic example. Over 20 years, I think, been sitting there. Yes, owned by a private company. But we need to understand why those sites aren't being developed, because it's part of our plan, part for the Island plan and the economic strategy, of course, is to grow our economy, is to increase our working age, working numbers on the island, diversify the economy. And we need infrastructure. We need things being built, and so we have those conversations to say what is it that we can help with to get some of these sites built. Bottom line is, often the costs involved, the higher costs involved in developing these sites because they're brownfield sites, means that the margins just aren't there, and investors will keep their money in the bank and or go somewhere else with it. So we need to have those conversations with them. That started. We opened the scheme in January. We opened it to applications, and then that was closed in April, and from that we've selected these three sites potentially. Government's looking at putting up to a maximum of 25% into those sites, excluding the cost of the actual site itself. And actually through the process, it was really an interesting sort of information gathering exercise as well to see what was out there, who would come forward. And certainly on the residential side, a recognition that an up to 10% support on residential works really well. And potentially, say up to 25% on what you call a mixed development, so different areas, obviously, potentially hotels, retail, leisure, etc. So that's what was being put forward. We want to see these sites developed. We need the infrastructure, and therefore, if we can work with the developers, we will do. But I think the key thing, the really key point to remember all of this, is any government funding that does go out, it won't be paid out until these developments are completed. I think that's really important to remember that. And we also know through our other work, through our financial assistance schemes, etc., that about at least half of that money will get back in return through construction, through the construction exchequer benefit by the time these sites are built. So I think it's a really positive scheme.
It does, though, seem extraordinary to me at a time when there's a housing crisis, that we need to provide incentives to developers to develop housing.
Yeah, and I think the key is that recognition that what we're trying to do as a government is look at those key brownfield sites. We have our urban unoccupied register. We know a lot of these sites, not all in Douglas. We know for a fact that these sites are really expensive to develop. Often there's difficult waste to remove, there's challenges, a lot of remedial works, which basically means that the developers aren't in a position to make it viable. So we want to understand that and work out what can make it viable, and that's where this scheme comes from, with an offer of up to a maximum of 25% of the development costs, not the land cost, development costs. Because ultimately, we need housing. We know we're wanting to get 1,000 additional homes across the island by 2026. We're talking here for 55 apartments in Lake Road, 37, 38 in Port Erin. That fits that model of what we're trying to achieve.
Rob Collister, are you convinced by the Minister and indeed the government's argument that we need to be using these incentives to get development happening?
Yeah, I think I absolutely support the government stepping in and dangling a financial carrot to get sites like the Villiers Hotel site back into use. And hopefully the same will happen with Middlemarch and Lord Street. I'm a little bit more concerned about the Lake Road site, you know, the 55 apartments, but I'm even more concerned about the Ocean Castle Hotel site. As you say, those 38 apartments do look to be at the high end of our property market. So will that actually contribute to get people out of social housing and into first-time buyers opportunities? I would say not. So I'm a little bit more concerned by that. But I am really excited about the Villiers Hotel site. You know, we're going to have commercial, retail, leisure space, plus a brand new 80-bed hotel. So I fully support the department in that direction. But as I say, I am very concerned about stepping in and supporting developers when they're looking at property. Personally, I'd like to see this government actually buying property off plan, working with developers, which if you buy them off plan, we're actually buying a property at today's price. The developer actually gets some capital to start the project. And what we're actually doing is taking advantage of the market prices today. So when the property or the scheme is actually finished, those property prices would have already increased. So there is good benefits there, and it's a win-win for me. And I'd like to see the department do more of those. But as I say, it's half and half to me. Great sort of initiative with regards to the Villiers site. A little bit concerned about the other two sites.
John Warrenberg, it does seem counterintuitive, this, doesn't it? That a business is established to develop property. We've got a significant demand for said property. And yet we need to incentivize developers to build.
Well, we do, because you've only got to look around Douglas. There's 30 plus brownfield sites. You've only got to look at the scar that was Summerland to know that nothing happens if nothing is done. And I think what we are doing now, what the government is doing, is absolutely right. It does sit badly with me a little bit that we're handing lots of cash to developers. But the proof of the pudding is, you know, nothing's been done for the last 30 years. So if we can't do it as a government, who's going to do it? We have to do it.
And I suppose then the other side to this is there are lots of other businesses on the Isle of Man that need incentives either to keep going, well, in many cases to keep going, certainly in the food and hospitality sector. I mean, Tim Johnson, I mean, you cut your teeth in promoting and supporting the food sector through your role in the Manx National Farmers Union. Does it concern you at the number of food businesses that seem to be going out of business at the moment?
It's just, you know, really sad to hear. And I know some of the news we've heard the last couple of days about a couple of very key businesses just making that decision. And it is it is a real concern, you know, and I was really sorry to hear that news. It's always been a very challenging sector of the food hospitality sector. For the islands, for the size of our island, we do have a lot of businesses, and we do see a lot of churn as such. Unfortunately, we see businesses start and some take off, and others that it doesn't quite work. So it's a real challenge. Obviously, the government supported the hospitality sector hugely through the COVID period, but we are back in what you call normal operating conditions. They are really tough conditions at the moment. I accept that. As far as government and support, as a department, through the business agency, we do look to support food businesses, food export businesses. It's very difficult for government to offer domestic support. How do you support one business against another? That's something that's a really difficult thing to do. But what we can do is try and make sure that we're helping the environment as best we can, so they can work and thrive. One thing we do offer in the department is our business improvement scheme. We do offer free consultation to businesses. We do engage massively with businesses. I mean, business agencies out all the time doing that, and we work closely with Chamber of Commerce on that as well. So, you know, one of my concerns is with a lot often happens with very small businesses is they are so busy at the coalface trying to develop a business, they're not always looking up and looking out and seeing where they're going and what the challenges are. And I think what we can do is help with that process. So, we do urge businesses, come and talk to us. If you are struggling, please come and speak to us, and we'll do what we can to give you the advice, the free advice we can.
Is, though, part of the problem here that actually what we need to do somehow, or your government perhaps needs to do, is create that overall vision and picture so that people will want to flock to the island, and then all these problems about having to incentivize developers to develop brownfield sites and supporting businesses to keep going, these things would then disappear or would be much diminished.
Yeah, but if you take the example of the island infrastructure scheme, if we can unlock some of the challenges we have and we can build the infrastructure we know we need to attract people to the island, you know, we are in competition across with many jurisdictions. How do we get the people here we need into our economy? So we need to have the infrastructure to do that. The more people we have here, and the better economies of scale we have to support local businesses. So I think it's that's why I think the island plan and the economic strategy is right. It's that longer term vision of what where we're trying to, what we're trying to achieve, to make things work better, to have those economies of scale. So I think that is really important, and the island infrastructure scheme, as we've talked about, is one example of that, of being able to unlock that potential. Because, you know, mention was talked about is it's a lot of money, it's a lot of capital, but that's the point, is it is capital, it is capital investment that the government will get back many times over in economic benefit, extractive benefit, and it's providing the infrastructure we're going to need for decades ahead. So that's going to help support the jobs we need, and that's going to help pay and have the economy we all want to see.
Rob Collister, what do you understand of the vision? Because apart from the grow the population by 15,000 figure, it's hard to really understand what it is that government's vision for the island is going to be. I mean, is that just me being stupid here, or do others struggle to understand that vision?
No, I think the island plan sets out the vision statement very clearly. The question is how we take that statement.
So then, what is the vision?
I think the island plan sets out very clearly what the vision of this island is during the term of this administration. And that actually sets out that we want a vibrant, diverse and welcoming island that provides excellent educational and economic opportunities for us all. And I absolutely support that. And I absolutely support that businesses need to grow and we need to help them and support them. And we need to create that environment that when people are looking to relocate to, say, the Channel Islands or to further afield in the UK, that the Isle of Man is an option, especially in the northwest, which is where most of our airline routes connect to. So we need to actually set the Isle of Man apart to say, when you are considering about relocating, if you're thinking about, as a newly qualified teacher, where to go, think about the Isle of Man as an option. And those are the sort of things we need to sort out. But in order to do that, we've got to get our connectivity to and from the island sorted. We've also got to look at our housing market. And if you actually look at the average price for the Isle of Man, we're around £286,000 for an average property. But in the northwest, it's £233,000. That is the barrier.
So, John Wannenberg, then, do you get what the government vision is? Do you think it's clear enough that people will say, actually, you know what, I'm going to go to the Isle of Man and I'm going to spend my money there because they seem to have really cracked it. They've got some bold ambition and big ideas for...
Proof of the pudding is if people come here believing that that is what we are. Now, I think government may be clear in their heads that that's what it is, but transferring that line of thought to people who would come here to live here, maybe that's not as clear to them. What I can tell you is that 30 years ago, I brought my family here. And we've grown the family, we've started businesses, we've done everything else. What we need to do is attract more people like that. And that'll increase the diversity of this kind of the Isle of Man. It'll, you know, increase our tax receipts. So what does the Isle of Man have that I value more than anything else? Is the safety, and that's certainly reflected in the island plan. I'm in Home Affairs, and the DNA of the island plan drops down to Home Affairs and making it the most secure, vibrant little island. And I know that some incredible people in Home Affairs work very hard to make sure that that happens every day. So I think maybe the island plan for Joe Public is not as clear as what we as politicians think it is. And I think we've got some work to do on that.
Do you think the culture of government is right? I mean, governments past have talked about a can-do culture. Do you think that exists?
Do I think? I can only tell you as I look in Home Affairs and Office of Fair Trading, I think certainly it does. But when I sit back and listen to people who call me up and complain, who are working within government, who complain about certain aspects of their jobs, then I think it would be foolish for anyone to say it doesn't exist. That there are problems. I think, you know, we wouldn't have a tribunal for Dr. Rosalind Ranson if things were good. They're not. There's lots of works to be done, you know. And before we start cutting services and increasing taxes, we need to look at what we do and make sure we're doing it. We're doing it right, and I don't think we're doing all of it right. And there's work to be done there, certainly.
I think it's also important to say as well that, you know, public reception and I think communication is one of those things which government's always guilty. And I think part of the whole point of the conference was to sort of get some of those messages out, what we're up to and what's happening. When I talk to businesses, when we talk to people coming to the island, they're very enthusiastic about our structure. They like the fact that you have that very close relationship with government. You can talk to senior people within government. You can talk to senior people within government. We sit down around the table with senior people in business and also the regulator. You can actually do that. They massively value that. You can't do that in larger jurisdictions. We complain about our planning system, and there's probably plenty to complain about, and we know that, and we're making improvements. But go to the UK and see what it's like, and they'll tell you it's a much better system here. Have we got problems? Yes. But sometimes it's about perception as well, and recognising that actually a lot of what we do well.
I always thought that when I was a government minister. Subsequent to being booted out by the wise people of Arbury, Castledown and Maloo, I've started to question this. And, you know, you look at some of the structures and systems of government and you think, we have to have more process in place as a public authority. You know, you can't just do things the way Tim Johnson, businessman, would have done things, you know, before you were elected into the Keys. A lot of business people speak to me and say, first they say, there's no such thing as a can-do culture. It's incredibly difficult to get the things that we need to make the progress. It's incredibly difficult to get decisions taken. And secondly, they say, we're not going to come on your radio show and tell people this because we'll be ostracised by the government. So are you just, is this perhaps a case of the emperor's new clothes where you're only being told what you want to hear when you're in government?
Well, I think I'll give an example, which we've just been talking about now. The Island Infrastructure Scheme went through Timwald in December. It went out on its first opening in January, and here we are announcing in September three major new developments through that scheme. That is me looking at a government's coming 2 years ago, recognising some of the challenges and working hard to put some real practical things in place to make things happen. That's a real positive. Can I defend everything, some of the processes and goes on in government? No, of course I can't. But I think sometimes it is about putting things in perspective. And when we have conversations with other people, we have conversations with other jurisdictions. And it's important to do that because we need to learn off from each other how to improve things. It's not all bad. That's the point I'm making. But of course there's things we need to do to improve things. But we are a small island, but we are a nation, and we run as a nation everything. Some people say, oh, you're only the size of a medium-sized town in the UK, but they haven't got to run a country. They haven't got all the structures they required to do that, and all the responsibilities of doing that, a health service to run, an education system to run. So we just, again, it's about getting perspective sometimes.
I will just jump in there, Tim. We have also all got examples where investors, people have come to the Isle of Man with good intention, want to invest in our island, and suddenly got, and even when I was in DfE, we had loads of schemes, and then it's surprising how many of them fell during planning, or they fell during disagreement over the most smallest thing. And we do need to create this culture where the Isle of Man is a good place to come in and invest, and there is money to be made from investing in housing, in businesses, for this island, for the future of this island. And that, to me, is where things are going wrong. You've announced three sites, and as I say, I have concerns with two of them, but the other one are absolutely fully behind. But at the end of the day, they've still got to go through planning. They've still got to go through all of that process. And I know we've got to have those processes in place. But sometimes I think government needs to step in and start saying we're going to do these things in the national interest. And that, to me, you know, we can all go back, and I can't remember exactly how many investors I've spoke to in the last 7 years, but it's in double figures, where they've given up and left the island, or they've just not bothered to invest their money in the Isle of Man. And that, to me, is what this government and the next government need to really resolve. This is a welcoming place. If you come here and if you invest in our island and you provide what we need, then we will get behind you and support you.
And I fully agree with that, and I think some of the issues you raised are absolutely right. And I think again, that's why, you know, coming forward with the built environment reform program, looking at how we're making these big changes, there's consultation going out now on planning. It's really important that we understand how we make these things better. I know with DfE, we now have a concierge service to help with that planning process, to help people navigate that process. So I think absolutely right. We need to be always looking at how we can make things better and improve, because I'm not for a minute saying it's perfect, because it's not. But it's, again, it's recognising the challenges and actually doing something about it. And I think we're now starting to see that.
You're listening to Perspective with Enterprise Minister Tim Johnson and MHK's John Wannenberg and Rob Collister. One of the things that you've listened to is the voice of some people in business who say that the work permit system is part of the reason why we're not able to fill the hundreds of posts that are currently empty at the moment. Rob Collister, do you think all these businesses that are saying this to the minister are wrong?
No, I'm not saying they're wrong. I just think the government has got the timing wrong. I think now is not the time to remove our work permit system. And I've always believed that. Back in 2016, I said to my own constituent when I stood for election that I absolutely have always been a supporter of the work permit system. And you've got to remember that work permit system has been in place since 1952. And we've also had historically low unemployment figures, excluding COVID and excluding 2012 to 2014. We've had historically low unemployment figures on the island since the 1990s. I think many people would describe our work permit system as a comfort blanket, you know, as ways of protecting the Manx worker. And that's people who's come to the Isle of Man, embedded into the Isle of Man and become part of our culture and part of our population. This is everybody who lives here on the Isle of Man. Now, what really worries me about this is I genuinely think the government is not, I don't think the department or the minister has gone out and spoken to other departments, because if he has, then he would see the same things I've seen, that we've got our secondary schools almost at full capacity. So there's no room within our secondary schools. There is very little room within our primary schools. We also have to remember what the area plan for the East said. And the area plan for the East said that if we reach 89,000, then this number of strategic sites are going to be released. That is going to create infrastructure problems, especially in my own constituency in Onchan. So I just, if you look at all of the evidence, and I include also the pressure that's on our health service. We know how many times Manx Care have asked us not to attend A&E or not to go to a particular service. We also know there's over 9,000 people at this island waiting for a first referral appointment, and 2,500 are waiting for an urgent referral. Then we have dentists, just under 4,000 people waiting for an NHS dentist.
So what you're saying, Rob, is that we've got a lack of staff, and the minister's taken an action to try and help with that.
No, that's not technically true, because if you want to take NHS dentist or if you want to take our health service, and I'm just looking at the labour market for August, out of 730 jobs being advertised, 173 of them relate to the health service. They're exempt. So they have no effect on the work permit system. And I think the other thing to remember is, and this is from the department, 70% of all work permits are actually approved on the same day or the next working day. The other 29% are actually approved within 3 days. This is not the barrier. If the minister wants to know what the barrier is, it's immigration, it's Brexit. They are the barriers. They have stopped us getting our workers that come, the seasonal workers that come into our hospitality and other sectors on the Isle of Man. Because if you're free to come into the UK, you're free to come into the Isle of Man. That is where the barriers are. It's not our work permit system, which is a simple administrative process, which is a comfort blanket for Manx workers. And I certainly will be voting against the motion next month.
John, then, it would appear from what Rob's saying is that the businesses that have been lobbying the minister aren't wrong, but then maybe they are. But actually, this is all about Brexit, and maybe we should rejoin the European Union. What do you think of that as a plan?
Well, I'm not going to comment to you politically, but what I mean, look, I may be a little naive, but I think it's glaringly obvious that the work permit system that we have currently works perfectly well. There are exemptions where exemptions are needed, and they are exercised as such. Back in February, when we had the budget, the following day I attended a seminar with the three ministers, which is both honourable members from Ramsey and the Chief Minister. And it was put to them by the Chamber of Commerce that work permits I'm not a problem. And I remember Mr. Hooper agreeing to that. So I'm not at all convinced that we have to suspend it. So I too will not be voting I'll be voting to keep them in place. You know, you mentioned geopolitically, without a doubt, there's mass migration across the world now. And I think we need to keep those things which keep this island as unique as it is in place without penalizing those people who come here with specific skills that we do need. I mean, I came here 30 years ago. It didn't stop me coming here.
Minister, this appears then to be a bit of window dressing by a government desperate to be able to demonstrate it's doing something. It sounds, certainly, if the studio is representative of Tynwald, that you're not going to get your support in Tynwald in getting the work permit system mothballed.
I think the important thing about is to understand what it is we're trying to do here. I mean, I would take issue a little bit with what Rob was saying. You know, he sort of seems to be more going into sort of population control, and this has got nothing to do whatsoever with work permits. From my point of view as minister, there's a clear commitment in the island plan to bring forward a consultation on work permits. That happened this year. We had the responses from that. That showed 60% support for the temporary removal of work permits, and another 10% who, on top of that, who wanted them scrapped altogether, and that's not something we're advocating. This is about people coming to the island with a job offer. It's nothing to do with immigration or population. This is about people coming to the island with a job offer at a time when we have record low unemployment of around 0.5%, around 250 people unemployed, and job vacancies running into around about 1,000 at the present time. The important thing is, if someone comes to the island with a job offer, that employer has already had to look locally for that job, to fill that job, and they haven't been able to do so. So someone comes to the island with that job offer, and it goes from there.
But that's the current system, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's right. And ultimately, at a time when, as Robert said, 99.9% of work permits are actually passed, it is just seen by business as, in the present climate, as red tape and an unnecessary bureaucracy at a time. Does that mean it hasn't been relevant in the past? Of course it's been relevant in the past, absolutely. When the jobs market was in a very different situation to it is now, when we had high unemployment, absolutely right. And that's why it's really important that we're not removing work permits. But what we're saying is that the Control of Employment Act stays in place. It's maintained the legislation. What we're looking at doing is bringing in a three-year period. This order will come in potentially if supported for 3 years. It'll fall away at the end of December 2026. So if it's not picked up before then and be brought to Tynwald, it'll end. But in the present circumstances, in the present market, it's a perceived barrier to the island. And the other key thing with the changes is we're still going to have registration. It's really important we do gather that data. And as Robert says, yes, there's quite a lot of exemptions at the moment. That's very complicated. There's over 20. It's very complicated. We don't always get the data gathered. By having a simple registration system, all data will be gathered. We'll know exactly who's coming. And that's really important. We still have the checks. The criminal checks will still have to be done. But it's a much more straightforward and simpler system at a time when we're not wanting to discourage anybody who makes that really big decision. I think we must remember that. It's a really big decision for someone to leave, to say from the UK. We're talking here about people who are living either in the United Kingdom or Ireland or the Channel Islands. This work permits are relevant to what's called the common travel area, that area. It's a big decision. It's not just packing the car and driving up the M6 for a couple of hours. You're moving to another country. And if they see the Isle of Man and the employers see that there's a work permit system, it is seen as a barrier. So at this stage, it's not relevant. What it also means, if we change it, the other key thing here is, it will give certainty for 5 years for an individual to come here. So they'll still have to register, but they'll have that certainty of not having to renew every 12 months, not quite certain how long they're going to be able to stay, family, etc. It gives certainty to time when we're wanting to encourage that. So that's the background of where we are and what we're doing.
Sorry, Minister, you're wrong on this. And I will give you an actual example of a barrier in a second. We know from the island's Labour report for August that we have 237 registered unemployed. But according to the International Labour Organization, there is in fact around 682 people unemployed looking for work on the Isle of Man. The job vacancies is 730 jobs being advertised at the moment. And I've already said 173 of those already are in the health service. The other 135 of them relate to catering and entertainment. Now, we've also got to remember, within the Island Plan, the government makes 19 references to skills. And I've already mentioned that we need a highly skilled workforce for the future. But believe it or not, 60%, 50 to 60% of all jobs being advertised on the Isle of Man are unskilled with no qualifications. So what we're actually potentially doing is open the Isle of Man to an unskilled labour market, which goes against the labour, which goes against the Island Plan. Now, I will give you an example, as I've said, about a barrier that's facing people. Somebody coming through an immigration route under the highly skilled, somebody that we desperately need on the Isle of Man, they have to find, on average, between £10,000 and £13,000 in fees. And that's regardless. Even if you have a baby, that child has to pay a fee to stay here. That is your barrier. Because I've spoken to people who have actually come here and they're working through this five-year period. And they're now, even during a cost of living crisis, have to find that final fee. And they can't find it. But they've already bought a house here. They already have a job here. Their kids are in school. And they're telling me, Rob, we can't afford this final fee. And they are now thinking about leaving this island. That is your barrier. It is not a simple administrative process around work permits which give Isle of Man workers some level of protection. I'm sorry, Minister, you're wrong.
But just before you come in there, Tim, John, you were trying to come in earlier. I don't know, has the moment passed? No.
The Minister mentioned a second ago that he's still going to be gathering information, still going to be doing all the checks. But yet, in the same sentence, he says he's going to be cutting red tape. So if you're doing those things anyway, then you may as well stick to it, the work permit. Because it does give the lower segment, the lower paid people in our society, that protection that they need. I mean, it wasn't long ago we had some Romanians begging in Strand Street. You know, we do need to try and keep those at the low end of our society as safe as they can be.
I think what I would say, Phil, here, this is where it gets very complicated with this conversation. We move away from talking about work permits, talking about immigration and the idea and perceptions of people coming to the island illegally. It's got nothing to do whatsoever with work permits. Rob has raised absolutely right what he said, that because of Brexit, more and more people are using the immigration system. So that's a real challenge and the real problems there, and it's frustrating. And Rob's raising issues, which absolutely is right to raise. And we need to be better at that. But unfortunately, we're also linked to the UK. So there's a lot much we can do in that area. I'm talking about people in the common travel area. So that's United Kingdom and Ireland and Channel Islands, not Europe, who don't, it's nothing to do with immigration, where the majority of people from coming to the Isle of Man come from the UK. It's that work permit system. And what I would say is that the key to it is seen as a barrier. People look up and say, oh, the Isle of Man, you have to have a work permit to come
Where's
here.
The data that's seen as a barrier?
That is the response we've had.
From
talking
who?
To business, the challenges they're having.
So where's
that's
the data?
That is why we had the public consultation, as we said we would. That is information we've had. We're acting on that information. But we're also saying that it's important that someone who does make that big decision to come to the island, they have certain surety. And that's why the big change is having that five-year period, that registration period for 5 years where they can come and work.
I'm going to snatch back control briefly of the programme. I mean, you said there, Minister, that the work permit system is nothing to do with immigration, and yet it is the only tool that the Isle of Man government has that controls who comes in to the Isle of Man. Many, many years ago, before even I was an MHK, Population Control Act was passed that has not been brought into force. Do you think perhaps the problem here is we've got all the we hang on to the work permit system because it is the only way in which we can control who comes into the Isle of Man. Maybe we would be better actually saying, OK, forget about work permits if this is the big problem that certainly you seem to have evidence to suggest, then maybe we need to look at population control in some other form.
Well, look, I think the point we need to make clearly, as things stand today, anybody can come to the Isle of Man from the common travel area of United Kingdom Ireland. Anybody can arrive here tomorrow. Don't need to have a work permit. If you can come here and you can afford to live here, you can move here now. That is a fact. So that's got nothing to do with work permits and people moving here. If you want to come and work here from the UK Ireland, you have to have a work permit. Going forward, you have to be registered. You have to come with a job offer. So that's the point. As far as the broader question about population control, that's a whole different conversation which you could have. And that I just want to make sure that we're clear that it's nothing to do with work permits. And I think it's concerning because there's too many people and too many messages going on around floodgates being opened and we're going to allow anybody in, and it's something to do with work permits. It's got nothing to do with work permits. Even today, anybody could arrive here. If they can afford to live here, because they can't get allowances, if they can afford to live here, they can come today.
So, Rob, you're itching to come in.
Well,
here.
I just want to put on record that I'm actually in favour of increasing our economic population. I support the minister on that. I have no problem. But what really concerns me, as I say, the work permit system, we know there's no issue with it. And the people, what does concern me, and I've spoke to hoteliers, paying £3,000 or £4,000 to get somebody here, and then as soon as they arrive, they disappear to another hotel. So these are all the concerns and the barriers we need to come through. But a direct question to the minister is the fact that if we do turn off our work permit and we do start to get unskilled people here, we have to remember they're not entitled to social housing for 10 years. They're not entitled to certain benefits. And a lot of those unskilled and those vacancies with no qualifications, they will be offering a salary of £10.85 per hour. So I asked the minister, how do they find accommodation on a gross income of £23,000 a year when we know that the rental market, there's very little property out there, especially under £1,000? So where do they live? That's the question to you, Minister. Where do they live?
And that is one of the real challenges. I think absolutely right. We need to understand where we get our housing from, how we have affordable housing.
I think
the important thing is we have to recognise that we need a full range of skills across the economy. We're not just high skilled, high paid individuals. We need a full range. And if we're struggling to find those individuals on the island, and if businesses have gone out and advertised and tried to find those people and they cannot find those people, then it's right that we go elsewhere to find those people.
Well, I'm sorry,
if they can't come from the United Kingdom or from the common travel area, then yes, then it's coming through the immigration system.
There's a lot of people want to do a second job on the Isle of Man in the evening, the weekend. They have zero contracts, which is absolutely fine. But if you go and speak to them, they'll say that as soon as that contract's adjusts, then what happens is it affects their main income, which then has tax consequences. And you'll find that their income has changed. And I've already explained that to the Treasury Minister. We need a process where people can access second jobs and the tax system supports them so they don't actually lose any income each month. But you go and speak to the people, they'll tell you they are desperately wanting second jobs. But we're not supporting them.
John, are you convinced by the Minister's warm and soothing words on this?
No, not entirely, no. And I put that, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise to him. I can see the opportunities he's trying to create by suspending the permits, and I acknowledge, well, that's to be welcomed. It's not enough for me to vote for it. He mentioned that nobody can come to work here unless they've got an offer of registration. Is that correct, Minister? So if somebody comes to work here, they have to have an offer, a written offer. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, as things stand, and as same going forward, you have to come with a job offer.
Okay.
And that employer would have had to try to find someone locally first before they do that. And that is the case. And that will
so
be the situation going forward.
A while ago, you just mentioned that work permits have a similar sort of barrier. So, but we're replacing one barrier with the next barrier, aren't we, if that's the case?
No, because we're replacing it with a very basic registration scheme for everybody.
So we're not cutting the red tape, really.
Well, no, it's a lot simpler system. But the other important point I made was, at the moment, you have a situation where someone might only have a work permit for a year. They have to then go back every year to renew it. What we're saying is it would give them 5-year period of time on the island, which when we're talking about housing and the challenges of doing that, having some more certainty, more surety once you arrive on the island is actually will help that process.
We've spoken about some of the things that were announced at the government conference. From a non-ministerial perspective, John, what did you get out of the Isle of Man government conference? Is it a worthwhile exercise?
I think it's entirely correct that government politicians reach out to the general public and give them some sort of format where they can engage. That is correct, and I believe that Alf Cannon gave that commitment when he became chief minister. So I'm entirely supportive of that. Now, whether the format, as we know it, is right, that is to be questioned. A lot of people work during the day, a lot of people work in the evening. I think it should be part of the weekend anyway, is what I think, to try and create people opportunities to come in. I think the narrative of having students bust in, like a North Korean convention, doesn't help. I was there on the Saturday, on the Thursday morning, in the cinema where they did a presentation on big infrastructure on small jurisdictions, which was very good, I thought, but it was 60% full, you know.
So what did you get out of that particular session?
Well, what I got out of that session was that the guy who's doing the Jersey Harbour, I wish he was doing the promenade. That's what I got out of that. Mm. And the other guy was doing Kew Gardens. And you know, how to do rolling infrastructure during something that needs to go on, like the promenade, like the infrastructure at the same time. That was eye-opening as well. So to see these things from a bird's-eye perspective is revealing, because the only exposure I have had is of things, unfortunately, going wrong, whether it's in the Prom or the Liverpool Sea Terminal project, of which I've spoken already in Timworld. So I do think it gives us an opportunity how things should be done cost-effectively if it's done right. And that starts with getting the right people to make the right inquiries, not sending people who are not qualified to make these kind of decisions. And I think we've been guilty of that.
Rob Collister, you, like I, were unable to attend, for various reasons, the Isle of Man government conference. But you will no doubt have pored over all the social media and the publicity churned out by government. What was your impression about how well or otherwise the conference went?
Although I was off island, I actually did follow most of the conference when I was away. And I thought some of the presentations, some of the information put into the public domain was excellent. As I say, especially the DfE one, especially tourism, where I'd been involved in for 6 years. I was really impressed with some of the presentations that was put into the public domain. I thought the Chief Minister did very well, you know, to explain some of the difficult. And I think this is, you know, we've had a good argument today over certain things relating to work permits. But I think we've got to remember the challenges that this government has had to deal with. It's far more than previous administration, you know, the cost of living crisis. We've also had to deal with Brexit and immigration, the things that we've just talked about today. So I think people need to recognise that we are going through an incredibly difficult and challenging administration. But I thought the government did well. The question is, as I've always said, is how do we engage with the people of this island? And at the moment, this particular administration is not engaging with the people of the island. You can see that by the number who attended the conference. But it was great to see the students there and having their sort of conference as well. So overall, I thought it was a good conference from what I saw. I've already announced my holidays for next year, so I hope the government can work around my arrangement, but it's unlikely to happen.
And that loud thump that listeners may have heard wasn't the minister taking a swing at Rob Collister. Minister, from a government perspective, you will no doubt by now have pondered the value of the conference. Is the Chief Minister seemed to be indicating when he spoke to this programme a few weeks ago that, well, we'll see how it goes, and there seemed to be a little bit of uncertainty as to whether this would continue. What was your feeling about how it all went?
You know, I think it was the right call to start the conferences. I think, as I say, this is the second one. I think quite rightly what you do is take feedback, and there were changes this year, having the evening session on the Wednesday, recognising people coming from work needing access. John's mentioned about maybe changing it to weekend. Well, you know, it's a challenge, because logistically that's a challenge, and also people are busy at weekends as well, and they've got the families to think about. And so it's always going to be really difficult for government to get the right timing on that. But as an opportunity for us as a government to be able to just update and talk about what we're up to and what's happening, and crucially for people to question. I think that's really important. I've got every confidence that we'll carry on with it, and you know, but we will take away feedback from this year and move forward.
It's heartening
that when you, I think, step away sometimes from the echo chambers of the social media, and actually you look at some of the people who were there. For example, the Q&A sessions for the Chief Minister, for the Treasury Minister, Health Minister, that it was full capacity. People are passionate and keen; they want to hear. But it was robust, but proper open debate and questions. I think people appreciated the opportunity to do that. I think that's really good, and I think that's something that's really, we have to certainly take away from that. That's something really, really good. Clearly, it's a big venue. You know, the Royal Hall's a big venue. You can lose 200 or 300 people in there, and it's still echoing. So it's always going to be a challenge. But some of those breakout sessions, I think the smaller sessions, Q&As, what the agencies, they did their presentations. MUA had one, built environment. I think as a principle, I think it's good, and something I hope we'll continue to do.
What specifically did you take away from the conference in terms of the feedback that you got?
I came away heartened that there's lots of people out there who really are interested and engaged and about the island, and I think it's really important that we take constructive criticism and take that and do something with it. We'll get feedback, and I think we'll take that away and from that. It was primarily about being able to update people what we're doing and get and sense checking that and getting those questions. And certainly from the sessions I was in, I was on the workforce and skills discussion panel, sitting in on the agency panels. Often it's the case, and I think Rob made the point, it's sometimes just getting the opportunity to actually explain to people what we are doing, because there's an awful lot of white noise out there at times, and it's really difficult to cut through. So that's something we need to work on and try and encourage more people there to listen and who really are genuinely engaged.
Halfway through the 2 years into this new administration, but this year will see us over halfway through the government's term in office, Rob Coles. So are they going to have an easy ride in Tynwald this year?
No, I think this will be a very difficult administrative and parliamentary period for the government. I think there's going to be more challenge. I think more questions asked. I think we all know where we want to be. The question is how do we get to that end point? And as I say, I'm really disappointed in respect of housing that we've not done more. And I know that I've raised that question considerably. And as I say, I'm not against removing work permits possibly in the future. But as I say, if you actually look at all the evidence, it shows that the Isle of Man is not quite ready to do that. And I think we've got to get all of our eggs in a row or eggs in a basket in a row in order to get our work to that situation where we can remove our work permit system. But I also remember leaving school in 1985 and being one of 3,000 or 3,500 unemployed on this island. And I never want to see this island go again. We need to nurture. We want to support the people of this island. We've also got to remember that we're losing 50% of our students. That is where the minister's focus should be, on creating that environment to bring more of our students home every year.
John Wannenberg, then, Rob Collister's suggesting he's going to have a basket full of eggs to throw at ministers over the course of the next year. Are you going to be delving into Rob's basket to throw a few rotten eggs at the ministers?
No, I believe I'll fire my own arrows. Thanks very much. And I certainly will when they need to be fired. I think, you know, we can't forget that the biggest asset this island has are its people. And we need to listen to them more. We need to trust them more. I wish they would trust us more. And I think Tim's right when he says, it was Rob. We need to keep our students here. You know, we need to spend some. We can give developers millions of pounds. We can give our students who go away and come back. We can give them their student fees back so they stay with us. I think that would be money well spent. We are nothing without the people. So. Let's start there.
That was Enterprise Minister Tim Johnson and MHK's John Wannenberg and Rob Collister. Well, that was exciting. Did the minister convince you on work permits, or are you tempted by Rob and John's arguments? Do we need to incentivise developers to develop their own sites? And if so, what does that say about the state of the Manx economy? Lots to ponder on this week's show. Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geisha Krom. Thanks for listening.